Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Losses Above Replacement, the best baseball podcast to grace your ears. I am today's host, Alex Clark, joined today by our very own Tommy John siblings here in Ryan Splash Potts and Matthias Altman Kurosaki. My main man, how are we doing on this fine Wednesday afternoon?
Pal, I don't know what you think I used my elbow for, but it's certainly not throwing pitches 97 miles per hour.
I mean, maybe you do throw them. Maybe, yeah, that's right. You throw them 100, right?
Exactly, obviously.
No, I
I
throw
mean,
rising curve balls at 100 miles per hour.
I mean, this is
Exactly.
fair. Yeah, curveball with a little bit of
Yeah.
rise, but at 100K,
Also,
yeah.
shout out to whichever Rogers brother hit the guy in the face on a pitch that he swung
Oh,
at.
Tyler, yes.
That
Tyler
is the
Rodriguez.
greatest moment in baseball history. I would take that. I would watch that over and over again. I would take that over Braves World Series. Okay, maybe not that far, but I would
I
take
was
it over
about to
beating the
say.
Mets today. That was brilliant.
That was dirty. His slider's
Yeah, his
insane.
slider's nasty. Yeah,
Yeah.
just I don't know how you hit that.
Yeah.
Granted, I don't know how you hit anything in baseball, but still.
Theoretically impossible. Yeah.
Yeah,
Yeah.
you know, I'm going to the retirement ceremony of a guy who threw pretty hard and threw a pretty nasty curveball, Dwight Gooden, on Sunday.
Oh,
I'm going
yes.
on Saturday, where they're doing a Dwight Gooden moving arm bobblehead giveaway. And then the next day, I'm going with my dad and my brother to the Dwight Gooden retirement ceremony.
That
I
is
mean,
very
that dude
cool.
was nasty back in the day. But yeah, a lot of baseball for me this week. I went yesterday to the Yankees Marlins game, which was pretty fun. Tickets were relatively cheap. I am once again pleading for the concession prices to drop because it is insane. I'll just say that much, but yeah, I'm doing all right. Finally was a little spring-like these last couple days.
Yeah, no, definitely. We're finally getting some really good weather over here, which is good for me because I'm going to have my first ever golf tournament this Saturday, and I'm very excited for that. But yeah, no, I've been playing a good bit of golf lately, but like I'm trying, like, as much as I want to keep watching the Mariners are making me continuously sad as of late. I will say on a little fun note with the eclipse that happened, the Mariners did post their graphic. They got like destroyed in that game. So they're
Oh
just like,
yeah.
dang, the eclipse blocked the score. I wonder what it was.
Yeah.
That was good. The
Was
eclipse
fun.
got some great tweets, and
It did.
I had one great and horrible and no good and awesome weekend. So congratulations, Justin and Alyssa, by the way.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I also celebrated my 30th on
Happy belated,
Happy
pal.
belated,
You're
Mr.
so
Clark.
old.
Yes.
You are so
Wow,
old.
yeah.
I'm a very old man. I
I'm
could.
turning 24 a week from
Oh
tomorrow.
my God.
So yeah.
Oof.
You guys and everyone here wonders who's the youngest and who's the oldest. It's not even close.
Yeah, I win.
Yeah, I know I win for being the oldest. My joints
Yes.
hurt saying that. Anyway.
How did it feel going to school with dinosaurs?
It was
You
really
gotta
cool. I
wonder.
had a T so I had a T-Rex that would carry me around to classes because obviously my ass ain't walking. But
I
anyway.
feel that. It'd be like that.
It do be like that. Anyway, what we wish it don't be like is how Major League Baseball right now has been going on with arm injuries. And I'm getting to a sad tone because we're in the first couple weeks of the season, and we already have a list of several pitchers that are down with elbow injuries, some requiring Tommy John, some not. But this is becoming an epidemic in baseball right now. Especially with the recent news again for guys like Gerrit Cole, Josiah Gray, Shane Bieber, Spencer Strider. Like, the list is enormous. And we still have a few guys that are also recovering from Tommy John in 2023, even. So, right now, this list is getting enormous. And again, all the people that we say here, unless we say that they've already been confirmed for Tommy John, it's not 100% confirmed yet here, though likely for a few other ones. Gentlemen, this is bad. Like, this is making the game feel so weird. Like, where you have all these top arms here that are all going down, it feels like simultaneously. At this point, it doesn't feel like coincidence anymore.
So I'm going to throw this out there that it's bad at the major league level, but it's worse at every other level.
Really?
You have college arms getting Tommy John's at an absurd rate. You have high school arms getting Tommy John at an absurd rate. And I think it's one thing when it's a major leaguer and like you're being paid $10 million of dollar or millions of dollars, and you have state-of-the-art workout equipment everywhere and state-of-the-art trainers and state-of-the-art everything, right? But there's like 15, 16-year-olds that think that Tommy John is a good way to increase velocity, a good way to be a better pitcher. Oh yeah, if I get Tommy John now, then I'll, be better immediately. And if I get a second Tommy John, I'll know what the process is to recover from that. And it's just like a trickle down of, it'd be one thing if the major leaguers had the most Tommy John injuries, but minor leaguers get it all the time. College guys, even high schoolers, and that's really tough. And there's really like no solution to it, because you pitchers have worked. I read a thread from Alex Wood that if you had a good work ethic, a great work ethic in 2012 when he was coming up, you were like pretty outstanding. Now, if you just have a good work ethic, a really good work ethic, you're the quote unquote first one in, last guy out type. Everyone and their brother does that. So you are competing with guys who are, pumping 99 and doing this and have crazy spin on their breaking balls and do all these weird things. And it's just like the human body's not meant to do that. And there's no solution, because if you, a couple hypotheticals I've seen, expand the rosters, you are diluting the pitching. Teams wouldn't want to do that. Well, institute limits on how many pitches you can throw. That's going to make it even worse, because you're going to do even more max velocity. There's a reason relievers generally throw harder than starters, because their outings are shorter. So if you're saying, oh, well, starters, instead of throwing 100 pitches generally, let's throw them at 80. Well, they're going to go harder for those 80 pitches or harder for those 75 pitches. So you are defeating the purpose there. And there's just no winning here.
Yeah, so I think, to what Alex Wood said, I mean, he has a lot of good points. I mean, about, the off-season stuff, I think. But I remember also Dan Heron tweeted it that, every video you see, I feel like, it's a guy, getting hyped up by his team, trying to spike a weighted ball as hard as he can. It's like, well, that's how you end up getting hurt. And I think that we've the sport as a whole, and Chris Bassitt said this too when he was interviewed, they've become so obsessed with velocity that that's all young pitchers especially are chasing. And just because you throw hard doesn't necessarily make you a good pitcher. I'll just say that much. I mean, you see, I mean, I love Pitching Ninja. I think he's got a great account, but he's posting these videos of all these sick pitches, and then you look at their line, it's like, oh well, they gave up 7 runs in 3 innings. Like, that wasn't actually that good.
But they had one good pitch.
But then you look at the velocity leaderboards, and a lot of the guys, with the exception of Shane Bieber, I feel like a lot of the guys who are getting the surgery are the harder throwers, or the guys dealing with elbow injuries. They're all in like the among the leaderboards in fastball velocity. And even Bieber went to Driveline this offseason, and his velocity increased. He looked great through 2 starts, and then he had to get Tommy John. So I think, I don't know if there is a solution, because yes, there are benefits to throwing hard, but I think we as a sport, as fans, we've almost been too captivated by this whole velocity concept that it's leading to, that's all people want to pursue, and then they get hurt.
I'm gonna bring up something that Greg Maddux talked about years ago. Because believe it or not, when he was drafted, he threw pretty hard, actually. He drafted, I think he threw like somewhere around like 94, 95, 96.
He was throwing 96 when he was at the Cubs.
Yeah, exactly. And but he had this really amazing quote that I really wish more people would like listen to. Velocity gets you drafted, but there's a second part to it where control and stuff makes you a legend. And that's what made him so dang good. And he didn't throw that hard at the major league level very much. Like, he had a fastball that would maybe touch 90, 91, had a sinker that would touch like 88, stuff like that. And he was still one of the greatest of all time at as a pitcher. He's the benchmark for control, for accuracy. And I think a lot of people are reading into this kind of stuff and will hear that quote and will only think of the first half of it. Velocity gets you drafted. Well, if you have good velocity, why build anything else? Get drafted, build as you're going, but then just keep that velocity because that's the reason why you're there. No, that's not true. It kind of reminds me of, honestly, there's a saying, we all know this, the saying, Jack of all trades, master of none, right? Well, a lot of people say hear that and think, oh, I need to be specialized because I'm not a master of anything. The rest of the quote is Jack of trades, master of none is better than someone who could only do one thing. And that's what Major League Baseball is starting to become pitching wise. But on the flip side of it, I kind of get it. Because right now, when you look at it from a scientific point of view, right, the less time that a hitter has to react to a fastball, to a pitch like that, the better it is. Because when you take a look at it, it takes less time for a fastball coming in at like 95, 96 to get to from the hand to the home plate to the catcher's mitt. It takes less time than the blink of an eye. Like, that is theoretically hard, like one, hard to hit, but at that speed that it's going with how close it is, the human eye legitimately cannot even recognize the ball. So they have to make their decision way earlier in the throwing motion. And so you have to try and figure out, okay, well, what's more valuable? Being able to just throw really, really hard or try to fool them with stuff that they can see? And the answer to that question, or at least what it's been now for the last little bit, is it's harder to hit a pitch you can't see. Like a curveball, you can see a bunch of times and then maybe try to get the breakdown on it. A fastball you can't see, there's not much to work on there. You're gonna guess from the moment that's being released and then hit from there. And hopefully you hit it, which to be fair is kind of going a little bit more into what we're talking about with launch angles and velocity as a, and exit velocity too, because that comes off of being able to read these pitches. And again, if you can't read it, you can't see it, you can't hit it. Like, as much as I hate that mantra, because I really do love control, but I also do love hard throwers here, it is something that is hurting the game. And this is no longer a coincidence, in my opinion, here. The one thing I will say on this, and this is something that a lot of people have said, is that the pitch clock is a big reason for this to happen. And I strongly disagree. Like, strongly, strongly disagree. Just because there's less time between throwing the pitches, people think that like 15 seconds or 20 seconds is way too short of a time. No. To give you kind of an idea, let me show you the time it takes to do it. That was 15 seconds. You don't think a pitcher can get the ball, get back in their motion, let their arm rest for a second, here, get the call through the pitch comm, and then deliver the pitch before that time? No. Like that's my point here, is that it has nothing to do with it. The only thing it's done is it's made the game go faster, which has made the fans enjoy the game so much more. Like, again, people get bored of seeing 3 half, 4 hour games. We don't as much because we are heavy baseball people. But if you're trying to build in that fan base, if you're trying to regrow it the way you are, you have to keep that. And but looking for what it is, there are so many bigger contributors than just a pitch clock. Is it potentially adding on to it? Like, I mean, maybe it is like a little
Yeah, I
bit,
think
but
there's a chance.
there's a chance, yeah, but velocity and the over-reliance on velocity is what's really doing it, in my opinion. There are a lot of great pitchers right now in baseball that are not on this list and do not throw hard, and they've proven that it can be done. Now, you just have to kind of keep falling in that mold and don't just stop the quote at velocity gets you drafted.
And the thing with the pitch clock is that, if you're going max effort on every single pitch, then I'm sure the pitch clock will hurt you. But while sure they might contribute a little bit, it's impossible to say that that's the number one reason everyone's getting hurt. Now, one thing I will say has probably contributed to it, and Tyler Glasnow was talking about this when he tore his UCL and had to get his Tommy John surgery in 2021, is the sticky stuff band.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because he had to grip the ball harder to pitch. It does add stress to your elbow. I remember Peter Moylan doing a segment on that too. So I'm sure that has also contributed to it. Now, I'm not going to say either of those things are the primary reason. You know, the other thing is, you know, with the obsession with velocity also comes with, pitchers are lifting more and more. They're doing more strength training and, you know, stuff like that so that their arm could be more explosive. Now, for a long time, that wasn't really a thing. Pitchers did not lift as often. And now we've reached a point where, you know, everyone wants to max out. So they're lifting like crazy in the off season. They're doing all these weighted ball drills, and it breaks down your body more.
Mm-hmm.
So
100%.
It's impossible to say what the number one reason is, but I, you know, Chris Bassett was saying how, you know, you have guys who throw 91 and have had some decent numbers at the major league level who are getting passed up on for the guy who throws 97 with a 7.5 ERA. So I don't know if this is going to change anything, but it's hard to look past the fact that, you know, just this whole obsession with velocity has led to more arm injuries.
And then
go for it.
Yeah, then you factor in like velocity on breaking balls too, that we always talk about the fastball velocity, and like you just kind of grip it and rip it. And with power sliders and power changeups and like these variations on just the fastball, the four seamer, I think that's a big part of it as well, because
I agree 100%.
I'm not a major league player. Major League Baseball is seeing more and more breaking balls, more and more off-speed stuff, but it's not as off-speed as it used to be, right? It's, you know, Edward Cabrera throws a 95-mile-per-hour power changeup, believe it or not.
Yeah, no, that's
Edwin
not
Diaz, Jacob DeGrom, Spencer Strider, you know, they're throwing, like, upper 80 sliders, low 90 sliders. Like, that, to me, is the... that's like the smoking gun here. Like, velocity has always been a thing. We've always had hard throwers. We've seen the Walter Johnsons, the Bob Fellers, the Nolan Ryans, the Aroldis Chapmans. It's the power on the off speed. It's the power on the breaking balls. I was reading a Greg Olson, the Rookie of the Year winner from the Orioles, and like he said, he didn't throw a curveball until he was late in high school. And nowadays, you have to have a three-pitch mix, and you have to do this, and they all have to be hard. And there's so much pitching that you have players that are coming up now that have thrown basically year-round their entire lives, their entire, like, baseball lives. And Alex Wood is saying, well, we would take months off. You'd go play a different sport. You take, you know, November, December, January, and then some veterans, they wouldn't throw the entire offseason. Their first throw after the season ends is spring training the next season. And there's just a divide because, like Alex said, teams would rather have a guy throw 97 down the middle than paint 90 on the corner. The data, as far as I'm aware, also backs that up. This is the same Spencer Strider argument. Well, he throws down the middle. It's throwing 99 down the middle. That you're not going to hit most of the time. And if you do, it's a single. Like, he is incredible. It's like 2 for 100 on pitches, like middle at 99. But if he's throwing 94 and it's not perfectly placed, it's a homer every single time, because these hitters are that good. So there's really no solution, because teams prioritize velocity. Teams prioritize stuff. If you are not prioritizing velocity and stuff, you are falling behind, Colorado Rockies.
Mm-hmm. One thing I do want to bring up, and this will probably be one of the last points to talk about this before we move on to something else with this here. I was just taking a quick look here on Fangraphs and taking a look at the average four-seam fastball velocity going into 2022, which, mind you, again, a couple years ago, but I don't have the updated for it yet, and it's only getting stronger. The average fastball velocity at that point was around 93.5 miles an hour. And that's the average. That's across all of Major League Baseball, from relievers, starters, all that stuff. You take a look at that number back in 2008, that number is 92. Like, it has gone up a considerable margin. However, on top of it, one thing I find even more interesting is that you go back into like 2006, something like that, the average that was close to 91. And that is some people's changeups now. Like, exactly what you're talking about here, Splash. Breaking balls aren't just throwing the ball softer. Breaking balls, no, they're thrown the exact same way, but guess what? They're with funky grips. Like a circle change, you basically do like the okay sign, then wrap around. You have knuckle balls, you have curve balls, sliders, splitters, fork balls, all these that are thrown with such funky grips and deliveries here. And all of those cause even more stress on your elbow because a normal fastball thrown is probably the most natural grip you're gonna have. Like I throw a two-seam fastball when I play, and for it's how I would just throw a baseball normally. Grip it along the seams and go. But you try to do something like a splitter and it's splitting your fingers in the middle from that. You try to throw something like a curveball, your entire arm is rotating. Now you put that velocity coming at, say, like 80, 82 miles an hour with that much twist on your elbow. There's a reason why this is happening. I do think that, you know what? I'm willing to say that velocity probably is the number one contributor. And it's not even just that. You throw the fastball, like you're saying, Splash. It is you're throwing all these pitches, all these deliveries that the human body was not made to do. And you're doing it while just completely contorting your elbow. There's a reason that, like, I want to also bring up one last thing here. This has not been like out of nowhere that velocity has been getting higher and higher, right? We've been seeing high velocity rising for years and years. But what I do want to know here, and I want to get you guys' take on this here, is that it seems like from the last couple of years here, this is a big jump in the amount of elbow injuries, like to pitchers, at least within the first couple of weeks. So do you think there is another underlying element that we're not talking about here? Again, we have no proof on any of this, so I'm not going to speak on it too much. But this feels like it's not coincidence anymore. The fact that we have all of these names here, all and almost all of them are power throwing guys that are now getting injured.
Well, I wonder is if it's a mechanical thing, because if to add velocity, are these guys like how much are they altering their mechanics? I mean, is it because I don't know what else it could be really. I think between the the sticky stuff, I don't think it's the pitch clock. Is it the training regimens? I mean, I feel like it could be a mechanical thing, like maybe. I'm not saying every single pitcher that's getting Tommy John surgery has the same mechanics, but like, I wonder if they're making some adjustments that are putting more stress on their arms. That's, I'm not a pitching coach. I don't know, but it's something worth thinking about. I wanted to also point to something Splash touched on a little bit, which is about kids learning how to throw like more pitches at a younger age. I remember when I was playing Little League when we were younger, like we were not allowed to throw curveballs.
Yep, like the same.
Because every parent was worried about their kid trying to learn how to throw a curveball and snapping their elbow. And nowadays, it seems like either they don't care as much about that, or they think that that's what they need to do to get noticed. So, yeah, it's kind of a combination of those things, I think.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I remember I was umpiring baseball games, right, for like select leagues. These are kids are like 13, 14 years old. And I was seeing curveballs. I was seeing changeup. I was seeing sliders. And I'm like, why?
I still don't even know how to throw a curveball properly. Like,
I
and
mean, I know a mechanic for it. I'm not great at it. Like, my curveball's pretty bleh, but I technically could throw one. But it's like you have to pinch the ball, like along the seam.
yeah,
And then it's
okay,
all
that
about
makes sense.
that twist on the thing,
Yeah,
like
that's, oh
snapping
my
your
God.
fingers.
Yeah, because I throw I when I when I play catch and stuff, I do throw a splitter from time to time. But the whole curveball, my arm probably wouldn't be able to handle it, and be like, I don't want to know what would happen if I had tried throwing a curveball when I was younger.
Yeah, no. I mean, the only pitches I was allowed to throw were my fastball. I learned to change up. That's my circle change I use, which I still use today whenever I get the chance to play. And then I had a little bit of fun throwing a Palmephus too, because it was
Oh,
funny.
nice. Yeah.
Because I'm like, you know what? Let's just completely m make the miss while my two seam fastball is like coming in on the right-handed hitter. They have to try and match it on it, and then they just see a little whoop.
There's one guy that I do want to talk about, and that's Aroldis Chapman. I saw some discourse the last few days on Twitter, and it's he is so like his mechanics are just perfect to minimize the wear and tear on the arm. It's just all torque from everywhere. It's just kind of just crazy to see that like the poetry in motion. And then you have other guys that throw hard and it looks like it's just arm. I know it's not just arm. There's like, say Spencer Strider, for example, has crazy quads, right? And these are like fine-tuned machines, right? The pitchers. But there are some physical freaks in baseball, like Aroldis Chapman, who's 6'4" and built like a tank, that he can throw 101 every year for 15 straight years. While Spencer Strider is 6 flat and under 200 pounds. And while he is has an incredible work ethic and this, that, the other, he's not 6'4" and built like a truck, like Aroldis Chapman is. And I think that's something that the outliers will always be outliers, the Nolan Ryans of the world, right? And Greg Maddux on the opposite end of the spectrum with the control and the, pitch mix and having great umpiring, by the way. Yeah, good job, Braves. But I think now everyone in baseball is trying to be the outlier. And I think that there will continue to be outliers. There will be Chapman types that throw easy 101, and it looks like there's no wear and tear on the arm. There is, of course, but it looks like he spreads it out everywhere. And like speed kills. If we say it in other sports, there's a reason that John Ross, Bengals draft pick, went in the top 10 after breaking the 40-yard dash record. There's a reason football teams take chances on fast players at every position because you can't teach speed like that. And in baseball, we are trying to teach velocity, and it's working to get them up to the majors, but it's not working for sustainability reasons. But it almost has to work for sustainability reasons because that's the ideal pitcher. The ideal pitcher is one that throws as hard as possible all the time. And that's just a tough place to be,
Or just play MLB The Show and make sure you use a 4'3" sidearm lefty switch hitter
that
that could
throws
throw
102
one
miles
oh
per hour.
they could throw 102 with a 55 mile per hour knuckleball.
Oh, yeah.
So
Very
exactly.
realistic, by the way.
Oh, extremely so. Yeah, 100%. Yep.
Yeah.
Anyway, we're gonna move on to our next topic here. Get on to a little bit more of a fun topic after how brow that one was here, and that is that it is a holiday for Baltimore, as Jackson Holliday has been called up to the big leagues. He will be making his debut very shortly, in fact, here. And on it feels kind of weird to say the phrase of the Baltimore Orioles called the top prospect again, because they've had so many dang good prospects over the last little bit.
Oh, and they're going to have the number one prospect next year with Samuel Basayo in all likelihood, too. Who's
More than
another
likely.
catcher, believe it or not. So
Wow. I mean,
they have
that's
like this run
crazy,
of
man.
like Henderson was the top prospect, Adley was a top prospect, Jackson Holliday is a top prospect now. And like from the prospect guys I listen to and I like respect, Samuel Basayo is he's in, I think, double
Masayo is
A,
really
Billy.
good. Yeah.
Yeah, he's
Yeah.
awesome. He's definitely more of a He's not quite as natural of a defensive player as Adley is, so he might end up being like a catcher first base type. But he's a stud, and the Orioles might have essentially four consecutive number one overall prospects, and they
That
don't
is
have anywhere to
insane.
play them, which is the wild thing.
It's a crazy problem to have.
I mean, it's a good
So,
problem to have, though.
yeah,
Oh,
it's
yeah.
like
I'd
that's why you
rather have.
trade DL Hall and Joey Ortiz, and I didn't think of anything of it. It's like, hey, if you're a kid and you go to school with Cheetos and you don't like Cheetos and you trade it for something you do like, That's a win trade. If you're the
Exactly, yeah.
Orioles and you have Deal Hall that isn't going to be used for you and Joey Ortiz, who is blocked by everyone and their brother, go get Corbin Burns. Corbin Burns isn't getting blocked by anyone.
Yeah, no, 100%. But yeah, no, I just wanted to talk about this for a sec. So again, Jackson Holliday, the son of MLB, I want to say legend. Is that fair to say? MLB
yeah,
legend Matt Holliday.
He was a seven-time All-Star.
Yeah,
World Series champion, second
exactly.
MVP in
'07. Okay, I just wanted to make sure that was okay in saying that. But yeah, no, Jackson Holliday being called up here, will wear number 7. Which is very interesting here, but I want to bring up something I just found because I think that this is just really cool here, is that the last person to wear number 7 for the Orioles was Cal Ripken Sr. Here, he was the last one to wear number 7 for them, and the Orioles asked the Ripken family whether Jackson Holliday could wear number 7, and their response was, "We are thrilled that Jackson wants to wear number 7." And I'm like,
yeah,
that's
awesome.
Awesome. That's so cool. I love that. And he's going to be really doing Baltimore proud on that. Like, I was taking a look at his stats as well for while he was in the minor leagues, right? And the dude was mashing, right? Over his entire MILB career, right? He had nearly 600 at-bats here with a batting average of .321 and an OPS of .948. And add a little bit of extra little pepper on that one. Just in 2024, in the 42 at-bats he had already clubbed a couple of homers, stolen a base, had a batting average at .333, and an OPS of over 1,000. The dude is good. I don't think anyone questioned whether or not he was good, but nah, this dude looks fantastic. And I want to ask you guys here, he's only 20 years old, and the Orioles are now building this dynasty of kids here. And honestly, I love seeing it because I love seeing teams build through, you know, prospects and all that. What is your guys' take on Holliday? Like, do you think that he's going to come in and immediately succeed, immediately start wrecking shop? Do you think that he's going to take a little bit of time? Or what do you think about him being called up at this point in the season right now, like so early on?
The Orioles should extend him, like, immediately. Like, they should get the extension done at 6:59 and let him walk out onto the field to the, I don't know if they're playing at home today, but walk
they're
out to
Boston.
The standing ovation.
Yep.
Okay. When he, okay, fair enough. But Holliday is an exceptional talent. I don't necessarily believe he's going to hit the ground running and be like Mike Trout as a rookie, because that's a one out of one. But I like the future projection here, that he's going to play second base primarily to start with, and Gunnar's going to play a lot of shortstop. But moving forward, Gunnar is going to be more of a third baseman. Holliday plays short. Jordan Westbrook plays second. Kobe Mayo or Samuel Basayo plays first. And you are locked and loaded for the next, you know, 5-6 years, at least until they all leave in free agency, because the Orioles aren't extending anyone. I don't know why. I like the glove. I think the glove will eventually play. Maybe not right now. I don't think he would be like a good glove at short now. He can probably be fine at short, or fine at second. All right, speed, but it's the power profile from the left side of the plate that's very. He's not as big as Corey Seager, but it's the Corey Seager profile, like the advanced plate discipline, potentially the advanced power. From the left side of the plate while playing shortstop. He's an exceptional player. He's a different profile than a certain Rays shortstop that was the number one prospect that we're not going to talk about, but he is like your prototypical number one prospect in the plus power potential at shortstop with a good enough glove to stick at shortstop. He's not a quote unquote shortstop. He is a shortstop. He just happens to be playing second base because you have a potential gold glover level, like at least utility player in Gunner at short, alternating with short and third. So I think it was a long time coming. I do want to throw it out there that MLB.com had this article yesterday that I saw maybe 2 days ago, that they're like ranking rookie of the year picks, and they still had Jackson Holliday in the top three, and Jackson Holliday has yet to appear in a major league game.
Yeah, I saw that.
Yeah.
I just had an issue with that. Like,
agreed.
Listen, Jackson Holliday will be very good. Wyatt Langford will be very good. He had a .623 OPS when I tweeted it yesterday. Paul Skenes will be very good. Major League Baseball, your writers, you will have plenty of time to talk about Skeens and Holiday and Evan Carter and Langford and all these guys. Go talk about Corey Lee on the White Sox, right?
Yes,
go talk
agreed.
about
yeah.
Go talk about Trey Lipscomb on the Nationals. Go talk about these other rookies that are having good starts this season. And to me, that's my favorite part about baseball, that you can look at stats one day and it'll be changed the next day. As of Tuesday, April 9th, Shea Langeliers was having a putrid season for the A's. Now he has an OPS in the 900s because he had three home runs against Texas.
Three home runs, yep.
Yeah, so MLB.com, you can talk about more players than Jackson Holliday and Wyatt Langford and Evan Carter and Paul Skeens and Yoshinobu Yamamoto. Like, acknowledge that, please.
Yeah. Yeah, like, one instance that I really, really liked was, do you guys remember Yermin Mercedes?
He
was in my top five when I was doing
he
articles.
Was.
He was,
dude, he
for
was
AL
awesome.
MVP,
that dude
man.
That dude was a masher for about a month.
Exactly, yeah. But it's that exact same sentiment, right? That it's, don't just talk about the big guys. Talk about some of the guys that are actually playing at the MLB level. Talk about Corey Lee and the fact that he's been doing amazingly. Like, yes, we're all excited for Jackson Holliday. Yes, we're all excited for Paul Skeens. Yes, we're all excited for all these people. But now, except for, you know, Holliday, who now is in the big leagues, they haven't done anything yet. Like, I will say I disagree with something you said, Splash, though, and that is that they should extend him immediately. I think he's going to be good, but I want to see how he actually plays first. Like, let him play a little bit and then extend him. Like, just because for the sole fact of I want to see what he actually does. There is such a huge jump from AAA to the major leagues. And I'm not saying that I don't think he's going to succeed. I think he is. But I want to see more about what he's going to do before you give him, you know, a 55-year extension. Right?
I strongly disagree. I think the time to extend young players is as soon as possible because the potential downside is minimized, right? If you, even when you have the John Singleton deal or the
Scott
Kingery, yeah. Even when those deals don't work, guess what? Those teams are on the hook for under $100 million. If you wait and you wait and you wait and you have to see the superstar potential, you have to see the Julio, you have to see the Fernando Tatis, you're on the hook for $300 million. If you're, I'll use the Padres as an example. The Mariners work too. Julio and Fernando Tatis had good seasons last year. Good seasons. You know, they both received MVP votes. Tatis won the Platinum Glove. Julio went 30-30. They have to do that every single year for the rest of their contracts to live up to that to contracts like that. It's the Francisco Lindor issue that Mac has to deal with, that Francisco Lindor basically has to be prime God, not even like prime baseball player, prime God to live up to the contract in the eyes of a lot of Mets fans. If you are Jackson Chourio or Colt Keith that got extended before they played a major league game, or Ezekiel Tovar, who got an extension very early before he had like really proven anything, if that deal busts or if he's just an average player, I'll take it. An Ezekiel Tovar for $10 million a year. I'll take a Jackson Chourio for $10, $12 million a year. I'll take a Colt Keith for $10 or $12 million a year. Those are great investments. I think that to me is the difference. And that can keep the Orioles competitive in like a free agency standpoint. Then you can go and maybe re-sign Corbin Burns in the offseason. You can go after high-level starting pitching. You can go after, you know, the next Shohei Ohtani, like DH-type bat to just bolster your lineup. And it gives you incredible flexibility. Look at what the Braves did. And I know the Braves are kind of like the poster child for this. But, like, you sign Acuna and Albies and you sign everyone as early as humanly possible. And if it doesn't work, Acuna tore his ACL. Strider's about to get Tommy John. Those aren't like perfect bets by any means, but you have committed under $200 million to potentially the best player in baseball, not counting Ohtani, and potentially the best pitcher in baseball for under $200 million for the life of the contracts.
Yeah.
Well,
I think, you know, with Holiday or with guys like that, I think buying out their arbitration years is perfectly reasonable. You know, say the Orioles give him a 7 or 8 year extension. Then you don't have to go through the arbitration process when he, you know, all of a sudden, you know, is an MVP winner. Then you owe him, what, $25, $30 million in arbitration?
Yeah, Soto made $30 million this year. And look at Corbin Burns on the same team. He had the He had the fight with the Brewers. That's a
yeah,
very
exactly.
outlier
Yeah.
situation. But for some players, that butting heads with the team itself is not healthy. So if you say, we're going to give you life-changing money today, and let's say it's 8 years for $100 million, 8 years for $120 million, there is a reasonable chance that Jackson Holliday is worth $15 million a season to the Orioles for the next 8 years. Perfectly reasonable. He doesn't have to be an
Yeah.
MVP level player. He just has to be a competent second baseman, a good second baseman, maybe an all-star in the occasional season. Look at Orlando Arcia's contract. He was an all-star last year. He's a good glove. He's an perfectly adequate player, and he's making like $3 million.
Yeah,
Like
I mean,
there, you
Jackson
can get.
Holliday got $8 million when he signed, by the way. When he signed, that was his bonus, was $8 million.
Jeez.
I mean,
I do
I
want
think
to.
Holliday's gonna be really good though. That's the thing,
I do
is
too,
that
yeah.
he's a major league ready bat. I really like his plate discipline, especially. I mean, he drew 101 walks in the minors last year. He already has drawn 12 walks against 8 strikeouts. And I'm not necessarily saying he's a slugger because he only hit 12 homers last year, but he also had 30 doubles and 9 triples and stole 24 bases. So this is a guy who's probably going to be the Orioles' leadoff hitter for a while. I think that's fair to say. The Orioles are just, they have so many players. That's the thing. What Splash was saying, like, where's Cobie Mayo going to play? Where's Samuel Basayo going to play? Ryan Mountcastle, is he even part of the plan? What about Anthony Santander? What about Cedric Mullins? Like, the Orioles are just chock full of talent right now. They need more pitching, I'll tell you that much. But first of all, it's another player who's the son of a player I grew up watching, which is insane to me. I remember watching Matt Holliday. Did he touch home in that game 163? I don't know about that. But I remember watching Matt Holliday just tear the cover off the ball. Felt like every time I watched him play, and now his son is going to be in the majors. That's crazy. And I feel like there probably will be growing pains when he gets to the majors, but I think there are plenty of reasons to be excited, and I wouldn't be surprised if he's in the Rookie of the Year race again. I
He
think
will be, yeah.
people were kind of expecting it. Maybe he'd come up last year. I think he's going to be really good this year. So lots of reasons to be excited in Baltimore right now.
So one thing I do want to bring up, though, when it comes to the idea of extending him, is that there are just as many good reasons as there are bad reasons, in my opinion. And we've seen a lot of guys that have done absolutely nothing when getting extended. As a Mariner fan, the first one that comes to my mind is one Evan White, who was supposed to be this amazing everyday first baseman and couldn't hit the ball to save his life. That though he did well in the minor leagues, but he was a first baseman with great defense, good speed even, and did nothing. Kelnick was one that was everyone thought that we need to give this guy an immediate extension. He needs to be here forever. He and all that. The dude didn't do anything. Like, yes, he's playing well right now, which again, good for him on that. But at the same time, the dude played, I think, a grand total of maybe 2 or 3 good months of baseball with the Mariners. Like, and then now he's playing half of a good month with the Braves. So you know what? Again, good on it for that. But there are just as many reasons, and I think we're underplaying how much money that these guys are signed for. Like, when you have, like, say, $10 million a year, that's how just playing dead cap when you have players that just aren't doing well, that hurts your team. That takes up a roster spot, that takes up a player, and it takes a player on the field that you're going to be starting over and over again just try and get back your return on investment. And then now you have just the money that's you're not going to be able to sign other players with, and you're going to be locked up with them for a very, very long time. It's one of the reasons why I like Julio's contract after all this. They let him play out for half a year, showed that he's everything as advertised, and then gave him a contract that is also very incentive based. So then the player gets more money the better they do. So it gives the player more incentive to be good. And I'm not saying that they need incentive to be good, just be a good baseball player. You're there for a reason. But and one more thing I will bring up here on this, and this is something that I think we've kind of been glossing over a little bit. What's the chance that Jackson Holliday would even accept a contract like that for Acuña or for that, where it is not near as much money, but guaranteed right now before they've done the playing time? Whereas if he has the mojo that he's at right now and he has the backing that he has right now, I don't think he would even accept an extension, especially from a team right now that has already shown that we're not extending players. Why would you accept an extension from a guy where they're going to say, all right, you're going to be our one guy forever on this? Then you have
I
a
don't
player that's going to be stupidly, that could be stupidly good, but you're going to take, I think at that point, you take the bet on yourself. And if you know that you're going to be worth three times as much money as they would be offering you right now, there's no way you take that.
I mean, it's also
So.
the whole thing, though, that you have to go through the arbitration process, though, if you don't take the extension. And that's why I think they would go for the guaranteed money instead of trying to do this whole negotiation game every off season and trying to see how much money you can get. Also, the during a player's like rookie contract, I guess you can call it, they make such little money in those first 3 years before they reach arbitration that, it's, I think it's worth it to take whatever the team offers you if you get an extension offer. Because, I mean, I think, what was it, Pete Alonso, when he was a rookie, he made more money from winning the Home Run Derby than he did from playing for the Mets. Like,
Which
that's
is
how ridiculous it
that's
was.
criminal. Yeah, no,
And
I
I
agree with
remember, I
that.
think, was it Mike Trout became like one of the first players to get $1 million before reaching arbitration. So I think if Holiday gets an extension offer, he would take it. Just
I mean,
purely
he
based
is
on that.
represented by Scott Boris, though, so that throws a wrench into
Oh,
it.
well,
That's not gonna happen.
actually,
On
yeah,
top
now
of
that I,
so is Gunnar, so that, and I think
besides.
Burns is too, so that throws a wrench into it. But even
Besides,
the Evan White
hold on,
contract, Alex.
let me say one thing here, please, first, is
Sure.
that aside of it as well, he's also part of the Holiday family, which now has a ton of major league backing to it as well, which they're not strapped for cash in
It
any way, shape, or
doesn't
form.
even mention Ethan Holiday, who,
Exactly.
according to some people, by the way, Matt Holiday has two sons who are baseball players, and they're both left-handed.
Oh,
But
jeez.
Ethan Holiday, according to some people, might be an even better prospect than Jackson. So
Yeah. So at
that's
that
a
point, like,
crazy family.
that's insane. But yeah, no, at that point, it's like, why would you take the guarantee when you already have a strong bet on yourself? You know how good you are, and you aren't strapped for cash. Like with players like Fernando Tatis Jr., maybe. Let's take that for an example. I remember hearing a story one day talking about Tatis where he signed this deal back when he was still in minor leagues that he would give, I believe it was like 15 to 20% of his earnings away every year in exchange for like this really big, like I think it was like $800,000 at the time, which helped like, you know, him get through everything. But now that he's making this egregious amount of money every year, now he's paying back that money like 20-fold. So it's like, okay, well, why not just take a risk, know that you're going to be in this kind of situation for a little bit, say, I'm not going to accept an extension right now. Let me play out for a little bit. Let me show you why I'm worth more. And then it gives the player even more incentive to do that. And teams have already shown over and over again that they are willing to pay out for the big players here. So I think if you're Jackson Holiday, there's no way that you accept an extension unless it is for 300 plus million.
This is a weird offseason to have that conversation when the top guys on the market, after Ohtani and Yamamoto, the Chapmans and the Snells and the Montgomerys of the world, they had disastrous off seasons, and those are all Boris clients, by the way. But I do want to circle back to Evan White, 6 years for $24 million. Woo, a solid $4 million a year for the Mariners. I know the Mariners are like strapped for cash and whatnot, and they have like extraordinary circumstances with the RSNs and everything, but that's $4 million a year, essentially. Like, you can find other baseball players for $4 million, and you can make that work. You can have a defective Evan White and then pay a different first baseman $4 million, and you're gonna have the equivalent production of an $8 million player. That's perfectly fine. And with
No, you
calling
won't.
up young players and whatnot, like, the Evan White contract is as bad as it can happen. That is the worst case scenario, essentially. And It's frankly not even that bad of a deal. It's a much better deal than, say, the Anthony Rendon contract or the Albert Pujols contract. And Albert Pujols was an all-star at times with the Angels and drove in 100 runs in a season. So you have these weird quirks that, yeah, it's a bust of a contract, but it's for $24 million. And that's what I'm saying with the Keith and the Churio extensions, that if it doesn't work, the Tigers and Brewers are on the hook for under $100 million, and they don't have to give out the option years at the end of it. Like, if the Acuna deal didn't work, hypothetical world that he tears his ACL in 21 and plays in, like he does in 2022, for the rest of his career, that's a player you might consider paying $12 million to, a guy that steals, 30 bases a year, hits, 20 home runs a season, brings some pop and energy to your leadoff spot. That's a guy worth $12 million a year. No.
No, I'm not. I think Acuña is an outlier, though. I don't think. I want to circle back to something that you said just a second ago. That going back to the Evan White idea here, that if you have Evan White on the hook for $4 million a year, right, and then you sign another $4 million a year, did you say that if you sign another $4 million player, that the two of them together would make an $8 million, like you'd get your value worth back? Because that's
Not
now saying
necessarily.
that you're, if you have a $4 million players doing nothing, then you're signing a $4 million player to play like an $8 million player.
Okay, I'm gonna. So, average first baseman salary is $8 million, right now on SpotTrac. We are in a situation that Evan White is making half of the average major league first baseman. Give or I don't know how his contract is distributed, but over the course of his deal, he would make $4 million a year. That is less than half of what the average first baseman in Major League Baseball makes. And I think you can offset the loss in production and offset the cost by having a young player to come up and replace him. And obviously, that's not always a one for one, and you're not necessarily going to have like infinite first basemen or infinite players at a certain position. But there are ways to like get cheaper. Right. And $4 million is not a big deal. And if you are saying you get a $4 million, Evan White's worthless. Okay, fine. I think you can probably find a productive enough player or a competent enough player for $1 million or a couple $1 million, whether that's a veteran or a young prospect, that you can have reasonable production without breaking the bank. Like the Mariners with Evan White. Reminder, they've been pretty doggone good at baseball the last couple years, despite having that albatross, quote unquote albatross, to complete
Oh, I'm not saying
disaster of
it's.
a contract
Oh, yeah, no, I'm not saying
at
it's an
first
albatross.
base,
Yeah.
no less.
Yeah. Ty Francis has been legendary. He's been great
Yeah,
over there.
like the Mariners got Ty France, and as far as I'm aware, Ty France doesn't have like a huge con. I think he's still in arbitration, and it's just teams can work around the money constraints. But if you are at $30 million a year and he sucks, that's a problem. At $4 million a year and he sucks, okay, you can work around that. You can call
They were
just,
able to offload them. I mean,
yeah,
yeah,
you can bring
exactly.
in the Mike Fords of the world and cut. Like, how much was Mike Ford making last year?
Not much.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And he
But
gave
like
you
that,
solid enough production.
he did. But again, then at that same point, when you're signing players for their worth, you're signing them hoping that they're going to be that worth or above. You're not signing them expecting them to do worse. And you can't expect them to play too much farther above their value. Like you can theoretically, I guess, but at the same time, like it doesn't, it's so much of a risk at that point where if you try to rely on that overall, it does, you're going to get closer and closer to that just middling to below middling because you're not going to be able to have reliable players. And then you're going to have an ever going circus of, all right, well, I'm going to have this one doesn't work. Okay, get him out, try the next one. Get him out, try the next one. You keep doing that over and over again. Now you've eaten up, let's say, like you do the Evan White thing with several different players, right? Now you have $50 million in dead cap. Now you have $100 million in dead cap that you have to try and figure out how to make do to make a championship team with half of your payroll gone. So I think right now, bringing this back here to Jackson Holliday here, my personal view on this is that right now, you would not sign an extension if you're Holliday. because there's not much of a real upside to it. Like, yes, you're going to be getting a lot of money up front. Yes. But you, if you fully believe in what you're doing, you don't need the money immediately, like to survive, like, or to even have a comfy living, because guess what? He's already got that. Then bet on yourself. Bet on yourself a little bit more. And you could still get like a mammoth of a deal even halfway into the season.
Yeah, I'm just looking at Evan White's Fangraphs page, and like this is like the worst case scenario, and he was like worth negative $6 million to the Mariners. That's
I
still
loved
the
him
worst
then
case
too.
scenario. I don't know.
Man, I
But
liked
then
Evan
again, I am a
White, so.
Braves fan. They've extended everybody, and that again, even if it doesn't work out, you're not on the hook for like let's say Michael, heaven forbid Michael Harris doesn't work out. That's like $70 million over 8 years. Okay. Tough.
Fair enough. Yeah, I get that. All right. Any other last things we have here on holiday before we move on to trivia?
He's batting ninth today.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, just I feel like obviously we've talked about or everyone's talked about how high we are on the O's offense, but the fact that Holiday's batting ninth today, I get it's his big league debut, but must be nice to have one of the the best prospect in baseball coming up and batting ninth. I think the Orioles offense, I'm not questioning in the slightest. I question their pitching staff, but man, I just to see them thriving right now, it's a nice breath of fresh air.
Yeah, no, I completely understand. I agree 100%. Anyway, with that being said, it is now time for trivia. And today I will be leading trivia for you both. And I brought this trivia back to our Twitter here at LAR underscore baseball here, where honestly, in my opinion, one of the cooler things that we've had with our account here is that we posted about that baseballreference.com had their war rankings posted for the year, and Baseball Reference itself liked and replied to us with just the fire emoji. And to be fair, I think that's pretty cool because considering how much we reference baseballreference.com. So I thought it would be a nice little shout out on that. Make sure you guys do not have any Baseball Reference pages up right now because it is time to go in order with war on baseballreference.com. So here's how this is going to play out. They currently have their top 10 yearly war leaders for on their going all the way back into the 1800s. Do I want you guys to go back into that far? Absolutely not.
Yes, you do. You
No,
want
I do
us to
not.
name like Ross Youngs. That's his name.
Ross Barnes.
Oh, well, there's a Ross Youngs too.
Yeah.
I'm looking at it right now. I don't think I actually see a Ross Youngs.
Okay. Maybe
Anyway,
he didn't lead the league in WAR, but
fair enough.
the other
Anyway,
Billy Hamilton
yep.
might have.
We are going to go in order. One of my favorite trivia ideas here is that one of you guys will do 2023, and then 20 next we'll do 2022, 2021, and keep going that way until one of you has three strikes. And to add a little bit of extra to it here, you cannot move on until we get the correct answer for that year. So, for example, let's say if Mac was going first on 2023 and got it incorrect, Splash would have to give 2023. And then if Splash got it wrong, Mac would still be on 2023. We're not going to be skipping any years. You will need to give me the correct answer for it. First one to three strikes is your loser. Here,
All right,
does that all make
question
sense?
here.
What's up, man?
Is this just position player war, or is it combined or whatever?
So this is the yearly leaders here for war.
Are there pitchers like are pitchers included in their leaderboards here?
I'm looking at it right now and I'm not seeing too many pitchers on this. The only pitcher that
Oh
I'm
boy.
seeing as part of one list is Ohtani, but I have a
Okay.
feeling it might just be oh, actually, no, excuse me. Yeah, this is just position players.
Okay.
This is just
Okay.
position
Gotcha.
players.
Position
Sorry.
player war.
I realized I clicked on that one,
Okay.
and guess what? We're going with it. So
Okay.
this is just position player, a positional player war.
So Ohtani only counts as a DH, so he would not be a correct answer.
That's what it looks to be on this.
And this is the
So, all
major
right.
league leader?
Yes, major league leader,
Major league.
sir.
All right.
Okay.
Gotcha. Works.
So, and again, this is baseball reference war. So, not using any Fangraphs, none of that stuff for today. So, I'm going to roll a dice here. Splash, would you like evens or odds?
Give me odds.
Because you're an odd individual and it is two.
Wow, beat me
So,
to it.
Splash, I love you, Splash. Anyway, it is a two. So, Mac, you get to choose. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
You're going to go first. All right. I need you to give me the baseballreference.com positional player war leader for 2023.
If I'm not mistaken, because of his positional versatility, the answer was Mookie Betts.
Mookie Betts is correct here by 0.1.
Yeah,
Fangraphs
yeah.
clears. Fangraphs clears just for this year, though. Fangraphs clears.
Mookie Betts was 8.3 and Acuña was 8.2. The next closest was Matt Olson at 7.4.
Okay, maybe
Anyway.
Baseball Reference does clear.
All right, Splash, give me the 2022 war leader.
That will be one Aaron Judge.
Aaron Judge of the San Francisco
Aaron
Giants is
Judge.
correct here. All right, Splash, I'm sorry, Mac to you with 2021.
Oh man, I've already reached a point of God, 2021. I should know the answer to this. That's what bothers me. Just position players. Oh man, I'm trying to remember even who won MVPs that year. I know it's definitely not the American League leader or the American League winner. Yeah, National League MVP. It's like I don't know why I am struggling right now with this
Oh
question.
yeah. Yeah, this one's tough. But I do need an answer from you.
All right, I'll just I probably am not gonna get this right, but I'm gonna go with Marcus Semien. I don't
Marcus Semien is your first strike.
Yeah, no, nah, I
Here, Semien hat was close, though, at a
Yeah.
7.1.
Yeah, I knew he was high. That's the thing. Yeah.
All right, Splash, I need you to give me 2021.
I'm gonna go with Juan Soto.
Juan Soto is also your first strike. Here, he was tied with Semien at 7.1.
Is it Fernando Tatis Jr.?
That is your second
Oh
strike
my
at
God.
6.6 war.
Oh
All right,
boy.
Splash. There's one name that you're forgetting.
Is it? Oh, Matt Chapman?
Matt Chapman is
No,
not
he had a
even in
bad
the top
year.
10.
No,
So,
he had a
all
down year
right.
that year.
You guys are both down to your last strike, so I'll give you both a hint for this one so
Okay.
we can keep going at least. It
Yeah.
is a shortstop.
A shortstop. Okay. Now I have to think of shortstops. Oh man, is it? Is it Carlos Correa?
It is Carlos
Wow. Oh my
Correa at
God. Yeah, right. Because
7.2.
he, yeah, because he had an insane defensive season. That's what.
That's
Oh my
tough.
God. Okay.
That's tough.
All
That's
righty.
tough.
So over to Splash. Mookie Bet. Wait, no, I was reading 2024. My bad. All right. Sorry. Give me 2020 in the
Same
shortened season.
dude, Mookie Betts.
It is, in fact, Mookie Betts. All right, Mac, to you in 2019.
2019, man. That was a wild season.
I did not like this season.
Yeah, 2019 was weird.
I wonder why.
I think the answer in 2019, if I'm not mistaken, is Alex Bregman.
Alex Bregman is correct at an
Let's go.
8.9 war.
Yeah.
All right, Splash to you, 2018.
Run it back, Mookie Betts.
It is, in
Yeah, he
fact,
was
again, Mookie
absurd.
Betts. Yeah, you're exactly
Only in
right.
a
You are.
hundred, like a hundred. He
I think
missed
Trout
like
had 10
three
war
weeks.
too as well.
Yeah, they both missed time due to injury and both got 10 WAR, which is insane.
Actually, according to Baseball Reference, Mookie Betts at 10.7, Mike Trout
Yeah.
9.9,
Oh
so
my
just
God, that's
shy.
that's one of the like adjustment
bonkers.
ones. Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, Mac, it's over to you. 2017.
2017. All right. I believe this one is Aaron Judge.
That is your third
Oh my
strike.
God.
But Splash, you have not won it just yet. I need you to give me 2017. If you do, then you will be today's winner. If not, Mac will have a chance to respond.
Okay, I'm gonna. You guys know the Gerrit Cole meme, like the 25 starts and his
Yeah.
stats, right? This is my equivalent. This is my Roman Empire. It's the 2017 NL MVP race. Giancarlo Stanton, 302 votes. Joey Votto, 300
Oh my
votes.
God.
Joseph Votto led the
Yes.
major leagues in WAR as a first baseman inexplicably and missed out on the MVP by 2 votes.
Joey Votto has
Yeah.
won you today's
Yeah. Oh
trivia.
my God. No.
Was it
As soon as
Joseph
you said
Daniel
that,
Votto? I
yeah.
think it's Daniel. I was blanking on it.
I think something like
Oh
that,
my
yeah.
God.
Votto had an
Yeah.
8.1 WAR. Here for this
That's.
Aaron Judge with an 8.0.
Yeah. Oh God. Now they. Yeah. Because I remember that's like the closest. Like other than the 1979 tie between Stargell and Keith Hernandez, that's the closest MVP race ever. I'm pretty sure.
I think
And
so.
oh yeah, because that's the thing. Stanton hit 59 homers.
Oh,
And
I got
Votto
a
still
stat
beat
for you
him.
guys. I got a stat for you
Yeah.
guys. Marlins home run leaders since 2017.
Oh
Giancarlo Stanton with
is
59.
still the
He's
leader,
still the
yeah.
leader. We are in 2024. We are 8 years
The
removed.
Marlins will A, haven't held on to guys very long, and B, just haven't had a ton of
Suck.
power
Just
hitters.
suck. Just that's the operative word here. They suck.
I mean, here's yeah, I mean, I'll be honest. I went
They
to the
can pitch
Marlins game
though.
last night. Yeah, no, their pitching staff has always been good. Their offense has always left something to be desired, and I saw it up close last night. They are 1-11 for a reason, with all due
Yeah.
respect to Skip Schumacher
Oh my God.
and
That
the
is the
Marlins
dumbest. That
brass.
is the. If I didn't have a very specific my time to myself, I might just tee off on the Marlins because they are abominable right now.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, speaking of moment to ourselves, first off,
Let's.
congratulations again to you, Splash, today's trivia
Thank you.
winner. But now it is time.
It's my time to shine here. This is why everyone's tuning in. This is my time right here.
That is a bold statement here, but it is time for the time to ourselves, the MTO, where we talk about anything that's on our minds. It does not have to be baseball related, but it absolutely can
It
be.
won't be today.
Okay, cool. Mac, you're gonna go first. No, Splash. All right, you have been pumping this up, by the way, for over a week
Okay, not
now.
quite that long, but oh my God.
It's I might want to check. Anyway, all right, your time begins in 3, 2, 1, go.
This is an open letter to the people at Snapchat. Have you in your life had a soda? Just a soda. Think about your soda. What color is the soda? Is it brown? Is it clear? If it's brown, it might be a brand called Coca-Cola. And that term can be shortened into Coke. There's also Coke Zero. There's also Diet Coke. There's also Cherry Coke and Vanilla Coke and Orange Vanilla Coke and all sorts of Cokes. There's a world of Coke in Atlanta. It's a beautiful place. I would highly recommend going there. Please, for the love of all things holy, give me my account back. Because unlike some people on Snapchat that solicit either themselves or things they, sell, paraphernalia and whatnot, I am not doing cocaine, you absolute morons. Thank you.
I was very worried you were gonna go way over on the time and do
Yeah, I
the whole.
thought, yeah.
I see your hand up, Alex. I'm not stopping again.
Now, that's only for I think I went like 10 minutes on that Otani segment because
You did.
I was livid.
Yeah, I had to go
10
somewhere
minutes,
that
yeah.
day after right after recording, and you were holding me up again with this, and I'm like, dude, stop.
Also,
Anyway.
Spencer Strider, please recover fast. I that's just sucks, man. That was originally going to be my thing, and then the next day the whole Snapchat. I got banned on Snapchat. That's FYI.
I think we got that. Anyway, Mac, would you want to go next or you want to let me do it?
You can go ahead.
All right, let's do this. Here we go. 3, 2, 1, begin. So I'm going into my first golf tournament this Saturday. I am extremely excited for it. In fact, it's kind of like all I've been thinking about lately because I just want to do well. It's the first time I've actually gotten to actually compete in something that actually had some stakes to it in years. And I'm very, very ready for it. In fact, I'm going to try and go play a round of golf right after we're done recording here. But at the same time, like, I'm so happy that I finally get to compete again. I also found out what my handicap is. My handicap is a nice 13, which, for those of you that don't know what handicap means, it basically means that if, on average for you, if you took away that many strokes, you would finish at even par. So for me, being at 13, that's actually a really good number. A lot of people have trouble breaking even 100, and I'm on average getting about 85. So I'm hoping to have a good outing this week. I'm going to try and get maybe 2 rounds of golf in before then. But you know what? Hey, I'm just excited to be competing again.
Yeah, that's how I feel with my swimming. I need to get a couple more. I'm supposed to go to Nationals in Indianapolis, and I'm hoping to get a couple more tune-ups before then.
Good call. Good
Yeah.
call. All
Yeah.
right, Mac, are you ready?
Yeah.
All right, your time begins in 3, 2, 1, begin.
Yeah, so I want to talk about college baseball for a second because my hometown, Columbia Lions, their head coach, Brett Baretti, became the winningest coach in program history. 362 wins now. He broke the record with 360. He's been there for 19 years now, and the second year he was in charge was the first year I went to Columbia University baseball camp. And I got to work with Coach Brady for 7 years. And you know, he's just a great guy, first of all, but also whether you're a beginner like I was, or if you have aspirations of going to the majors, he was willing to work with you, willing to make you better, and he will make you better. So I just want to shout him out. I mean, 360 wins, winningest coach in a pretty decently storied career. He's also sixth all time in the Ivy League history in wins, so that's awesome. Also, they posted a tribute of, you know, people, you know, congratulating him. And first of all, I got to see some of my old counselors, but also seeing his kids all grown up now makes me feel kind of old because I remember what last time I went to a camp, just 10 years ago. Some of them were still in strollers. So, shout out Coach Brett, and I can't wait to see what the rest of the season has in store for you.
That's always cool whenever you get to have like a coach that finally gets their roses, you know? So
Yeah.
yeah.
It also blows my mind he's been there for 19 years now.
Right? Yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's gonna do it for today's show. Thank you so much to everyone for tuning in here. Make sure you go follow us on Twitter as well as on Instagram at LAR underscore baseball. We have a YouTube channel where we'll be putting out shorts as well as we'll be putting the VOD for this podcast. Make sure you go follow me on Twitter at thesportsguy242. Go follow Mac at Matthias underscore A underscore K. And then go follow Splash at Mr. Splashman19. But from all of us here at Losses Above Replacement, I want to thank you all for giving us your time. Have a great rest of your day. Stay safe. And I hope to see you all real soon.